right. Earlier on today, we spoke to Daniel Bowen, who is the president of the Public Transport Users Association. Now, the PTUA was founded in 1976, and it's a consumer organisation representing passengers of all forms of public transport. They're a non-profit voluntary organisation with no political affiliations, and they lobby government and public transport authorities in the interests of all users of public transport. So they've got their work cut out for them at the moment. They also work with other bodies and through the media to promote public transport and educate the community about the benefits of sustainable transport policies. So we spoke to Daniel, and he's been the president of the PTUA since 2003, and he does take his daily train commute into the city. And we asked Daniel, what is the core aim of the PTUA, and where do you get your funding from?
Public transport, maybe to do a little history, the Public Transport Users Association started in the 1970s. In 1976, a disgruntled train user got kicked off a train at Ringwood and couldn't get home, and he had a lot of problems. And he was he wrote a letter into the Melbourne Herald, as it was then, calling on train users around Melbourne to unite, form an organisation to not just have a whinge, but also to look at the problems facing public transport users at the time.
Was this guy just being unruly?
I wasn't there, so I don't know.
Is he still around?
He's not. No, Frank Casey, his name was. He passed on a few years ago. Out of that came the then Train Travellers Association, which broadened to all public transport in the 1980s.
Okay.
We've now got around about 1,000 members who get our newsletters five times a year. We've got a core committee of about a dozen volunteer activists who write policies and do media work and lobby operators, government, and all the rest. So that's how we run, basically.
So public transport seems to be in a pretty dodgy state in Melbourne. Can you give us an indication of how bad it is on a sort of global scale?
It varies. I mean, I think, as most people know, there are cities in North America in particular where people are much more car dependent than we are in Melbourne, and that's, you know, the lowest base, I think, of some of those spread out American cities where literally everybody drives everywhere to get anywhere.
Yeah, and there's no footpaths in some American cities.
Footpaths.
It really scared me. I didn't understand. When you went to walk somewhere, like, you've got to literally get in your car to go 100 metres.
Yeah, look, I've some distant relatives live in Phoenix, Arizona, and, you know, you could walk some places, but we were told visiting, look, don't walk after dark. It's dangerous. There are a few footpaths. So it's a real problem. So we're not quite as bad as that.
That's
but
true. That
but
is
equally,
true.
There are cities, even including in North America, such as New York City and a lot of European cities, where public transport is seen as a genuine alternative to car travel. And it's not just if you're going into the centre of the city, and it's not just if you're going to a big event like the football. It's for every day, for everyday use. No matter where you're going, you can walk, cycle, catch public transport. You may want to own a car, but it's really an option. Whereas there's a lot of areas in Melbourne where you basically can't do anything if you don't have a car. You're too far from the shops, you're too far from school or uni, you're too far from job opportunities. If you want to do anything and you don't want to have to wait an hour between buses, you must have a car. And that's where we're at now. So Melbourne's public transport network is really underdeveloped for a city this size, and it's what we seek to lobby governments to fix.
So the government seems to have had numerous plans for improving the public transport system, but it doesn't seem to appear to be improving at any great rate. So what can you give us an outline of the major issues causing the lack of progress in improving our public transport?
I think it's the politics of the thing, that there's a mindset amongst those in power that you can build your way out of traffic congestion. If you keep building roads, the traffic congestion will just vanish. And we know that's not true, because in every Western city in the world, the more roads you build, the more cars you attract onto those roads, and you end up back where you started, except you've spent a few billion dollars in the process, and you've also got people more dependent on motor vehicles. And that's very much the path we're going down now, that $1.5 billion is being spent, for instance, widening the M1. Could build three or four train lines. And, you know, a train can easily carry 1,000 people. That could be 1,000 cars off the road right there.
So we're not that one of the most bizarre ideas that our society keeps clinging to? Like, one of the most outdated, weird
especially
ideas.
When the M1 goes down to a tunnel, it's like, hello, there's a little bottleneck that you can't do anything about, so it's no use widening everything around the bottleneck.
It's bizarre. Why are our politicians clinging to that when it's so well-published all over the world that that's not the answer?
Look, I'm not sure.
He's not allowed to say that, retarded.
If I knew all the answers, you know, maybe we'd be getting somewhere. But, you know, it does appear to be from the Premier down, and you know, amongst lobby groups such as the RACV and the oil companies will continue to lobby to keep cars as the dominant form of transport. And while they're doing that and while they're spending billions of dollars on widening freeways and building new freeways, hello, Deer Park Bypass just opened, federal money.
It saves approximately 15 minutes on your trip into a trip across. 15 minutes.
Give it 5 years. Give it 5 years and see how fast it is then. Because all those suburbs out there, they're all car dependent. Yeah. Your Caroline Springs, out to Melton and all those suburbs.
But those suburbs, I mean, obviously there's a huge argument. A city like Melbourne and the American cities you mentioned are too spread out for an efficient public transport system to get to everyone's house. I mean, there are technical difficulties with public transport in a city like Melbourne. What can we do about, you know, increase everyone's density when the Australian dream is Caroline Springs?
Density is a factor, but if you look at these outer suburbs, you'll see they've got traffic congestion out there. If they're dense enough to have traffic congestion, they're dense enough to have a bus running every 10 minutes down each main road that would give people a way out.
That's a good point.
What they've instead is a bus that runs every 30 to 60 minutes, which nobody uses unless you don't have a car.
My big question is why developers are allowed to put Caroline Springs there without building a fast train line to the city.
Yeah.
That'd be a good policy.
Yes, there are some basic planning.
Interestingly, there is a train line quite close to Caroline Springs. I think at its closest point it might be 500 metres away, but there's no railway station there.
Now, why?
And there are other suburbs like this, like Pakenham Lakes, which is just between Pakenham and the next suburb along. I forget the name of it. But the rail line runs right past it with no railway station.
And they actually, in that development, they had said beforehand that they would build that railway station, so I don't know whether that was just a promise as opposed to a guarantee, but I don't know how they got away without.
There's still
that
a government
station.
Promise to build that railway station sometime next decade. But
how
in the meantime, all
the
residents have moved in. They all move in and they look at their local bus timetables and their transport options, and they think that bus runs every hour. I'm not going to use that. I'm going to buy a car for every adult in my family, and we will drive everywhere.
I'm feeling infuriated. What can people do to vent their fury about this? How can they channel it and get something done about PT?
Keep the pressure up. Join groups like the Public Transport Users Association. There's other groups as well that have different emphasis on, say, environment issues or whatever. Join those local groups. Get involved. Write to your local papers, your daily newspapers. Call in to radio feedback, not just the fine people at Joy FM, obviously, but the 3AWs of the world, the 774s. Yeah. Keep up the pressure. Write to your local politicians. The more pressure that's on there to get real public transport options for people, especially in those outer suburbs, the more something will happen. We've seen a lot of pressure recently with overcrowded trains coming into Melbourne, and this has got a real profile now, and the government, to their credit, are actually throwing real money at spending up big to try and fix these problems. They're buying more trains, they're looking at options for changing the patterns to run the system more efficiently. If something is enough of a problem, enough of an embarrassment to the government, they will act.
They will do something about it.
And the lack of transport options at the moment just isn't quite on radar.
You're on Joy 94.9 with Heating Up, Ali and Kate, not Gary. And that was Daniel Bowen, the president of the Public Transport Users Association, telling us about some of the issues we're having with public transport and why.